Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about David Koepp's 2004 film Secret Window. Joining me today is my regular co-host, Tyler. How's it going, sir?
Doing pretty good, Ben. Stretching right now.
Sound a little strange
for this massively epic Secret Window themed podcast episode.
Oh man, that may be overselling it just a bit, but
and I have been drinking celebratorily.
Excellent. Okay.
I'm living the high life right now.
Nice. Well, if you people are just joining us for the very first time, welcome. We start every episode with the character name game, transition into our media consume section where we talk about what we've been watching, move into our review of the week, and finish up with listener voicemails and emails. You can always leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566 or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. And you can find this and every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com.
Woo!
So this week, the character name game, I'll take it, take on the challenge of seeing if I can stump Tyler here. The character for this week, the name is Rudy Baylor. So Rudy Baylor, be thinking about that at the very end of the episode. We'll come back and keep in mind that that character has to have some sort of connection to a film that was released this past weekend. So, Tyler, let's go ahead and move into the media consumed section. What have you been consuming this week?
Well, Ben, as you well know, this month is March Movie Madness.
Yes.
Ben's Movie Reviews presents March Movie Madness. So I've written articles for the movies I've been watching, which include Secret of Kells, which is an animated, kind of an Irish-themed movie. Mm-hmm. It's not too long. It's like 75 minutes. It's really good. Check it out. It's on Netflix. Instant watch. And Commando, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, also on instant watch. Also pretty bad, but also fairly entertaining as far as how bad it is and how bad the acting is. Have you ever seen this one?
I have. It's been a long time since I've seen Commando.
Well, let me just tell you the very end, the very last one-liner almost.
Is it Bennett? Is it the one involving Bennett?
Yeah, Bennett. Bennett's fighting him, and then Schwarzenegger like javelin throws a metal pipe through Bennett. It impales him completely, and then impales like a tank holding steam. So he's thrown it through a human being and then through a metal casing of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't to a point or anything. It was just a regular tube, like a plumber's pipe.
Right.
So it didn't really like penetrate very well. It basically blunt force trauma through both the person and metal canister, and the steam starts leaking out of the pipe, and Schwarzenegger says, "Let off a little steam." So from that last moment in the movie, you can kind of guess how the rest of the film feels.
Yeah,
fairly enjoyable, and you can read my thoughts on both those movies for March Movie Madness at notjustnewmovies.com.
Nice.
I also checked out Crazy Heart this weekend with Jeff Bridges. I guess he won Best Actor at the Academy Awards last year for his role in this.
I'm really interested to hear what you have to say about this, because I know that you're not like a huge fan of country music, but I also know that you are a Jeff Bridges fan. So
I mean, I like music in general, which, you know, includes country music. So, and you know, a lot of country western, like honky tonk kind of stuff, I just enjoy because of the ridiculousness of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the character that Colin Farrell plays, like the modern country star, is kind of like, you know, he's like a, you know, a pretty boy. He's not somebody who hangs out in the bar and gets drunk every night and has women leaving him, you know.
Right. He's
like
more of
real
like
real western singers we talk about.
Yeah. He's like a Brad Paisley or something like that, you know, like those type of people today.
But this movie went up and down, because it felt like The Wrestler almost, because he was trying to like rekindle what he was, but then he didn't have the motivation to write new songs or do anything that would skyrocket him into popularity again. And the drinking really didn't pose a problem until, you know, if you've seen the movie, you know, till it like towards the end, where he eventually realizes how much his drinking is having an effect on him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's an incident with a child, I think. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
It always involves a kid, of course. Mm-hmm. And then that's just the disgusting scenes between him and Gyllenhaal where they're like kissing and stuff kind of put me in the bathroom to regurgitate what I had eaten before the movie.
Wow.
Just unnecessary. I mean, you can feign a love interest. You don't have to actually show the love scene between the two people. So
I didn't have a problem with it at all. I actually found Maggie Gyllenhaal to be very capable and pretty compelling in this movie, and that's coming from somebody who doesn't necessarily appreciate the majority of her work. So,
but her character was a drunk too, so I didn't really see her being so, like, I didn't take her seriously when she was being so judgmental of Bad Blake, since she was just a drunk as well. Like, she would just leave her kid at 1 a.m. to go to his show. You know,
yeah,
couldn't really take her seriously.
I think it was implied that Bad Blake was just a little bit more out of control with it, and that Maggie Gyllenhaal's character at least had some semblance of like structure in her life.
Yeah, I mean, his life was pretty cool, except for the fact that he had to drive himself everywhere to these shows.
Yeah,
I mean, the venues are pretty cool. Like, I'd love, if I was a musician, I'd love playing in a bowling alley for like 20 people instead of like a huge arena full of thousands of people.
Yeah,
but I guess he didn't really like that.
Yeah, I like,
but yeah,
that,
I mean,
that one particular scene where I think it's at the bowling alley where he like asks for a drink and the guy makes him pay for it even though he's performing there.
Like, it was kind of the same thing that happened to me when I watched Walk the Line, the Johnny Cash documentary.
Because the biopic, not documentary.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Like, I thought it would all be about the music and how he had become, you know, where he started and then where he ended up, but it was more of just this one piece of time where he was doing drugs and getting into fights all the time and all this drama and everything. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's not what I want to watch. I want to watch, like, the history of the music. This was more drama than music, although there was music in it. It was pretty good.
Yeah, what did you think about the music in the film?
Was it written, were all those songs written by the guy that wrote, produced, and directed it?
Not all of them. I think a guy named, I believe his name is T-Bone Burnett, helped out with the writing and stuff. And I think even Bridges himself contributed a little bit to it, because those guys all have like a pretty intense music background. Yeah. Bridges and Scott Cooper, the writer-director, and I think T-Bone Burnett is fairly legendary in those kinds of circles and stuff. And also, I think a guy's name is Ryan... he was the one who ended up winning an Oscar. It was actually, his name is the same as George Clooney's character in that movie Up in the Air, which also came out that year. So I just remember that being kind of a funny coincidence that the real life guy and Clooney's character were named the same thing. His name is Ryan something. For the life of me, I can't remember it right now. But yeah, I really enjoyed the music so much so that I went to iTunes and bought the one song, what's it called?
She Heart?
Funny How Fallen Feels Like Flying, you know, that one.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like the duet with Colin Farrell, I bought that version. Because I actually think that Colin Farrell, I mean, he's got a kind of a small role in that movie, but I thought he did really well. And totally, both of them, him and Bridges, I thought were, like, absolutely convincing.
Considering Farrell has an Irish accent, pretty thick one at that.
Yeah.
I was like, American country western star?
Yeah.
Irishman?
It's unexpected casting, but I think it works really well, and I think both of them work very, very well as musicians. I think, you know, if in another life or something, you know, they could have been pretty high-selling, musical artists.
Yeah, it was pretty good. If you have a choice between The Wrestler and Crazy Heart, which for some reason I kept associating Crazy Heart with The Wrestler, like it felt like The Wrestler almost,
mm-hmm.
The Wrestler was a little better, although both were pretty dramatic, like, and kind of had the same tones as far as the character succeeding and failing in different aspects of his life.
Yeah.
Nice. But it was, yeah, it was worth a watch, I guess. If you like Western music, it's definitely worth a watch.
Cool. Anything else you've been consuming?
Nope, just hanging around.
Okay, good stuff.
Thanks for asking.
I got a chance to see two wide release movies that I'll probably end up talking about on the Geek Tyrant Weekly podcast. So if you are just visiting us for the first time, head over to iTunes and subscribe to that, or you can find it at geektyrant.com. So
Let me guess the movies, dude.
Oh, go for it. Yeah.
Rango Adjustment Bureau.
Nice. Yeah. Well, it's not really that much of a secret, considering I've already written reviews for both of them at notjustnewmovies.com.
Doctor Strangelove, wide release, 2011.
As Tyler just jumped the gun and mentioned that I did see Doctor Strangelove for the first time, I also watched a Dave Chappelle stand-up movie called For What It's Worth. And both of those, like I said, I've written reviews for, so you can go there and kind of read some brief thoughts. But I clearly preferred the Chappelle stand-up just because of its lighter tone, and I was not really a big fan of Dr. Strangelove. I don't know if that makes me like a horrible film fan, because that movie's supposed to be such a classic, but it just did not work for me. So,
Do you know anything about the Cold War?
Yeah, I do know a little bit about the Cold War. I mean, I'm not a history buff. I mean, you're involved in academia and political science in particular, so you have a much better grasp on that time in history than I do.
I am barely involved in academia.
I did not pick up on like the kind of subtle nuances, but I said this in my review that I think the movie Doctor Strangelove, and the full title is like Doctor Strangelove or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. I think that movie probably worked really well at the time, but doesn't necessarily translate very well now. So
did they make any jokes about Khrushchev's weight?
Not that I can recall off the top of my head. No,
I'm just trying to think of like random humor during the Cold War.
Right. Yeah. This was a bit more subtle than that. So. They didn't really go on an all-out attack, but
we're running out of ideas, like Eisenhower's running out of hair. But oops.
Nice, man. You should have been a cartoonist in the whatever in the 60s. But one other aspect of the media consume section that we talk about is not just recent TV and movies that we've seen, but concerts. And I actually just won tickets to a concert tonight, so I'm disappointed that I haven't been able to see this concert yet and talk about it now, but maybe next week I'll bring it up. There's a band out here in Los Angeles called Steel Panther, and they are an 80s hair metal cover band, basically. And I ended up winning tickets. They're playing at the House of Blues tonight through Twitter, so I'll probably try to report back next week and see how ridiculous that actually turns out to be.
They're going to close with Don't Stop Believing.
It might happen. I don't know. We'll see.
Oh, it will happen.
All right. Well,
either that or Hotel California.
I don't know if that's considered hair metal.
Oh, man. What are you talking about? Guitar solos. That's all they want. Hair metal. Let's see. What would there be? Come On, Feel the Noise would be a good closer.
Yeah, totally. Maybe like
Children Cry will probably be like a bathroom break song.
Here I Go Again, maybe some White Snake. Yeah. Get something like that.
Maybe
going.
Maybe a little Poison's.
Nothing But a Good Time. Basement.
No.
Oh.
In the Old Man's Ford. What's the name of that song?
I don't know.
Give me some more. Oh. Talk Dirty to Me. That would be a really sweet closing song.
Okay, maybe that's an encore. I don't know. We'll see. I'll try to write down the set list if I can.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, cool. Well, let's go ahead and move on into our review of Secret Window.
Only thing that matters is the ending. It's the most important part of the story. And this one is very good. This one is perfect.
For Mort Rainey, every story is a window into another world. But some windows should never be opened.
You stole my story.
I don't believe I know you.
I know you, Mr. Rainey. That's what matters. You stole my story.
Kind of an amazing coincidence. The stories being so much alike.
Her death will be a mystery. Todd Downey's dead.
The guy calls himself Shooter.
Maybe my name, not Shooter.
Hello?
Remember my story, Secret Window? You and me are the only people that know about that, right?
You scared too easy.
You're up there all alone. Anything could happen and nobody would know.
What do you want from me?
My ending. I want you to fix it.
All right, so Secret Window is a movie directed by David Koepp and released in 2004. It is actually based on a Stephen King short story called Secret Window, Secret Garden. Tyler, let's start with you. What did you think of Secret Window?
Ben, I wanted to rip this movie a new one just because I'd seen it before, and I thought it'd be a good opportunity to just be the other side to the argument.
Mm-hmm.
But I pretty much enjoyed this film. I thought it was well put together, had good pacing. Dialogue was, you know, not anything outrageously good, but, you know, enough for me to handle.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'd seen it before, so I knew the ending. So watching it a second time, knowing what happened, is kind of a downer because you're basically second guessing everything that happens throughout the film. Mm-hmm. Like when I first watched it, you know, you're watching it without knowing what the ending is. So you're kind of saying, oh, what's going on here? What, you know, you're constantly saying, what's going to unfold? But mm-hmm. then this time around, I was like, I'm just trying to make up some outrageous things to observe and trying to find everything wrong with this movie. And I didn't find a lot wrong with it. So,
yeah. Interesting. I like that you assume that I like this movie already. Like, you were talking about you wanted to tear it a new one because you wanted to be the other side of the equation, which
right.
implies...
Yeah, I usually like what movies like this.
I mean, I thought it was okay. I actually didn't like it as much as I thought I was going to. I think there are a lot of movies out there that deal with this same type of thing. I guess we should yep. say right now, just off the bat, in case this is a first-time listeners or something.
Spoiler.
Yeah, we're definitely going to be talking about every aspect of this movie.
And I may spoil other movies as well.
As he did with Commando and the one-liner.
and other movies in previous podcasts.
Yeah. So forgive us for that, but battle on with us if you so desire. So I think there are a lot of other movies that deal with this kind of mental illness. I think it's called like dissociative identity disorder, basically, where like a character or a person in real life, because it's actually a real thing, will create another person that kind of inhabits their own body and then like resort to operating as that persona to block out traumatic events or, you know, kind of deal with certain things. And I think there are a ton of movies that deal with that kind of protagonist in a much more interesting way than Secret Window does. I mean, just off the top of my head, like Psycho is like the most famous one, right? Probably.
Sure.
Fight.
Spoiler.
Yes, I know. That's what I'm saying. Well, yeah.
But we ruined Psycho for everybody.
I'll try.
If you haven't seen Psycho yet, turn off the podcast.
I'll try to stick with the really big ones, but Psycho and like Fight Club is probably the most popular recent one that really hits this point home. For another, like a more humorous look, maybe something like Me, Myself, and Irene. That's another relatively recent movie. And I mean, I don't know if that movie necessarily does dissociative identity disorder better than Secret Window, but definitely to a more humorous effect. But anyway, the point that I'm trying to make is that this movie mines some pretty familiar territory, and it kind of feels like that. Like, the movie itself feels a little flat to me. You were mentioning that this is the second time you'd seen it, so you kind of knew the ending. This is the first time that I had seen it, but somebody spoiled the ending for me back in 2004, and I remembered what it was, basically, that Johnny Depp and John Turturro's character are one and the same. So I essentially was operating with that kind of the same information that you were this time around, I guess. And I feel like even if I didn't know that beforehand, it would be pretty easy to guess. Because
I didn't really have that problem. I didn't see that coming. Although, this what was this, 2004?
Yes.
I probably hadn't seen a lot of movies yet.
I think, I don't know, just like the fact that nobody else ever interacts with the John Shooter character. And I think at one point it shows that their cigarette brands are the same. And like there's a lot of these like little hints and stuff throughout the film that that kind of allude to what's going to happen later. So I don't know. Basically, I think the movie is just kind of it operates fairly well, and everything is kind of technically proficient, and it looks good. And like you said, the dialogue, it's okay. Like, there's nothing really phenomenal going on. I think it's like a good movie. I would give it like a good, like on the, you know, right above average, but pretty well below great or awesome or anything.
Yeah. It's one of those movies where you're like, it's 7 o'clock at night. We just ate dinner. What, you know, we've watched everything on the DVR. Let's watch Secret Window, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
if you haven't seen it, if you've seen it, you're probably not going to watch it.
Well, the thing that really makes the movie worth watching, in my opinion, is Johnny Depp. I mean, this is a role that's not really like anything that he's become known for ever since. I think Johnny Depp really kind of rose to popularity with the Pirates franchise, obviously. Because like a lot of people probably didn't even really know who he was before then, even though he had been in some high profile things and like Edward Scissorhands, and he kind of carved out this like more of an independent kind of niche audience, if you will. But
Benny and June.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of kind of eccentric stuff going on in his early filmography, but I think ever since his
21 Jump Street,
ever since his rise to mainstream, I'm not even gonna acknowledge 21 Jump Street. Ever since his rise to mainstream, I think he hasn't really challenged himself that much as an actor, which is disappointing to see. Hopefully with things like Rango, which I thought was really great, he'll, you know, maybe slowly start to move away from those franchises and stuff and
I've seen him challenge some stuff. I mean, you had the one where he sings The Barber of Seville.
Yeah. Sweeney Todd.
And then he did The Corpse Bride, which I thought was going to be like the companion piece to Nightmare Before Christmas, which I really enjoy. And Corpse Bride, I don't really remember anything substantial from that film. So, But I think he sings in that too.
Okay. So singing equals stretching his talents a little bit too.
Well, I mean, if you're an actor, you're used to saying lines as opposed to singing songs. You're not a musician, you're an actor. So I assume if you're stepping out of your comfort zone,
right,
as an occupation,
yeah,
kind of stretching your abilities.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely fair. I think you're right.
I mean, if he began doing gymnastics in the Olympics, I mean, then he'd be really stretching his abilities.
Right. But I think, like, basically he falls into this thing where he works with Tim Burton all the time. And, like, you know, the character of – I mean, how different really are Sweeney Todd, his character, his protagonist in The Corpse Bride, and, like, the Mad Hatter in Alice in Wonderland. You know, like, there's not a lot of difference. It's all kind of weird, whatever. So
eccentric.
Yeah, very much. So this movie was like right before the big push, I think, and it does. What's that?
I just said Depp Mania.
Oh, Depp Mania. I bet he has that like painted on his wall in his bathroom or something. But
tattooed on his chest. So all the girls can read it.
There you go. Because that's what he needs to get a track. You know,
if you forgot, I'm Johnny Depp, Depp Mania.
I think this performance is really solid from him. I don't think that he's given that much to work with because, like I said, even though it's a complex character, something doesn't feel fully fleshed out to me. I'm not really sure what it is. There's some sort of aspect in this movie that I can't really put my finger on. Maybe it's the like the pacing, and like that if you do figure out early on, it takes so long for that reveal to actually happen.
Yeah.
I feel like it could have been maybe a more interesting movie if they revealed it maybe like halfway through or something, and then kind of dealt with the effects from there, instead of just devoting whatever, probably the last 15 minutes of the movie to those effects. But
he had a pretty wide range of emotions in this movie. Sometimes he's comedically sarcastic, and then other times he's yelling at people, like whether it be the ex-wife or Ted or whatever. Uh-huh. And it's just kind of like at one point it's dramatic, and then other times it's funny, like black comedy, or excuse me, dark comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of up and down. Like, it was kind of enjoyable to watch because by the end of the movie, you're kind of familiar with the character and the characters that he's trying to get a hold of.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, yep, they deserve it. And I'm on Depp's side on this.
Yeah, that's kind of a really interesting thing that like this. I guess a problem that I had with it was, I think you and I picked up on that like maybe those characters deserved it, and I don't know how much of the regular audience would think that, you know, because it seems like. It seems like just out of the basis of morality and like being, I don't know, like it seems as if the movie wants us to be able to pull for Amy and Ted in this scenario, because it paints Johnny Depp's character as kind of an unreliable narrator, and he's crazy and all this stuff, whatever, like he's overreacting to this situation or whatever. But like Amy, who is played by Maria Bello, is not a likable character. Like, she's in the wrong. Yeah, she and Ted both are clearly wrong in this scenario. Yeah. So
my last line on my list of notes is cheaters never prosper.
I think, I mean, like they totally get what's coming to them, I think. And I think that might be what my disconnect is with this film, is because I don't know if David Koepp, who also wrote this script, I guess adapted it from the Stephen King story. Yeah. I don't know if he feels that way, you know, because it doesn't come across really in the movie like a kind of catharsis when those characters are killed. It comes off as like, oh man, I, you know, like the tone of the movie feels like we should be supporting them and their whatever romance, like non-legitimate romance,
right.
Instead of celebrating with Rainey as he kills them. So I don't know. I felt
the opposite, because I thought the movie was behind Depp, because Depp's character, or what is his name, Mort Rainey.
Yes, Mort Rainey. Yeah.
All I ever see is Mort from Family Guy. like he's the likable character, you know, and she calls him and asks him questions, and mm-hmm. he's like, "I don't want to talk to you," and she insists on talking to him, and like giving. You know, not innuendos, but hints that she still likes him or loves him or whatever. Mm-hmm. But then she's like, "Yeah, I'm still with Ted. Whatever.
Yeah.
We're moving in together," or what, you know, whatever. And he's just like, "Well, why are you calling me then?" And so, I guess maybe it's more of a guys' camp where the guys relate with the man, and then the women relate with the ex-wife. But yeah, I was on Depp's side, because I thought the movie was on Depp's side, because the character underneath. All the strife,
mm-hmm.
even though we find out that he is also the bad guy,
mm-hmm.
but the good Depp character is likable. Yeah, Rainey he's the likable character. He's the one that's being shat on by everyone.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. There's just something about the way that the movie was put together and executed at the very end, like it made it. For some reason, it gave me this kind of – I can't really put my finger on it, like I said, but some sort of sense.
The ending was kind of weird, especially with the camera pans to below the corn, which mm-hmm. was perfectly fine until the last second when he's biting into the corn cob. And I'm just like, okay, that was unnecessary. Somebody should have just cut that.
Yeah.
Because the camera panning from the house to the corn was perfect.
Yeah.
And then crunch, and you're like, ruined it.
Yeah.
So kind of left a slightly bad taste in my mouth.
Right. No pun intended, I'm sure.
Booyah, winning.
You bring up a good point with the camera movement. What did you think about like the cinematography of this movie? Did anything kind of stick out to you?
I mean, during his dream sequences, those were kind of cool, where he would wake up, or he was always taking naps,
mm-hmm.
which I assume is when he was doing the dirty work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the only time I remember like radical camera movements was during the dreams, which may have been, you know, intended.
Mm-hmm. I thought that like, okay, first of all, let's talk about David Koepp for a second.
Let's rewind.
This is a guy who, are you familiar with David Koepp? Just like, do you know that name? Is that like a famous name to you?
Does he have anything to do with The Mist?
I don't believe so. Let me check his filmography. No, he doesn't. David Koepp kind of rose to power for writing the screenplay for Jurassic Park.
I am familiar with his work.
Yeah, he's got a lot. Oh, you're definitely familiar with his work. I just didn't know if like that was a name that you recognized off the top of your head. But
hold on to your butts.
he's got a lot of hits and misses on his filmography, and I'm not really sure where I come down on him as, like, a professional, because, like, the goods are really good and the bads are really terrible. So I'll go through and read some stuff to you here from his work.
I'll be the final judge of whether it's good or bad.
Okay. Jurassic Park, and this is just, like, a random selection from his IMDb page. So Jurassic Park, Carlito's Way, which I've never seen. The Shadow with Alec Baldwin.
I love that movie.
The screenplay for Mission Impossible, the first one. The Lost World, Jurassic.
Ooh, yeah, winner.
Snake Eyes with Nick Cage. Let's see, the original Spider-Man film.
Yep, good.
And by original, I mean the 2002 Sam Raimi one. I don't know if there's one in
not
like the
1940s serial.
Right? Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. That doesn't exist.
Panic Room, the David Fincher film. The screenplay for War of the Worlds, the Steven Spielberg
H.G. Wells
version. Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
That's a podcast on its own.
It really is. And then Angels and Demons are kind of his recent ones. So
he didn't do Da Vinci Code, but he did Angels and Demons.
Correct. Yeah. I believe Akiva Goldsman did the Da Vinci Code, but.
That's another podcast on its own, because I've read he really didn't live up to the book.
Yeah.
But I'm not gonna be that pompous ascot wearing guy. The book was much better.
Right.
I'm not gonna be that.
Like I hope that that little snippet of, you know, selected works from his filmography kind of provides a little bit of context for kind of where this guy stands in the entertainment industry, because he does have some really great stuff, and there's also some pretty abysmal stuff on there. So
a lot of those were books, which is interesting. You know, like, is he like, does he take books and then adapt them to film? Because that's sometimes really hard to do, I would imagine, because you're taking fans of the book and the author's kind of creative, work, and somehow trying to get it to fit into 2 hours or 2.5 hours of film.
Yeah.
You don't want to leave anything out to, you know, piss off fans and the author, but you also want to make sure that you include all the major plot points.
Yeah, and like, obviously those two mediums are so wildly different. Like, you have to have, there's like a formula to making movies, especially like action movies and stuff. It's like every 20 minutes there has to be kind of an action set piece. And it's got to be tough, because books aren't necessarily written that way. So it's, I think that's why a movie like Angels and Demons doesn't necessarily work very well, because it works so much better as a book, because the action or perceived action is kind of as you're reading it and you're like learning as you're going and stuff. But then when you watch a movie like Angels and Demons, it's like, it just seems kind of very run of the mill and almost pandering and just like more like exposition overload, basically. Like, they're just telling you stuff the whole time, and that's fun when you're reading because you're absorbing that information on your own. But it seems like when somebody's on a screen talking at you, there's something about it where there's a little bit of a disconnect there. But David Koepp, like, he's got this movie called Premium Rush that's coming out soon, and he is actually writing and directing it, and stars not just New Movies Podcast favorite Joseph Gordon-Levitt as a
as Cobra.
No, as a bicycle riding delivery guy in New York City, I think. And he like gets this package that he's not supposed to have, and then it's basically a chase movie where he's on a bicycle going through the city. So I mean, it actually sounds good, and I'm looking forward to it. So
is it a pizza box?
No, I don't think so.
Is he here to fix the coffee machine?
Not entirely sure. Maybe we can talk about that when the movie comes out. I think it's supposed to come out like 2012 or something. But
oh, good. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, so wow, that was the longest little tirade of all time, and just trying to provide some context into David Koepp. But basically, my entire point of bringing that up was he's done some interesting stuff as a director as well, because he directed Stir of Echoes and, like I said, and obviously Secret Window, a movie called Ghost Town that came out in 2008. He's done some interesting stuff. I think this movie, as far as the camera work and cinematography and stuff, it starts out really well. There's that opening shot of him, of Depp's character, sitting in the car, and the windshield wipers are going, right? And he's, like, talking to himself. That's another hint that he's crazy, by the way, is that he's constantly talking to himself. But
I think he just had voices in his head at that point. It wasn't until later in the film that he actually responded to those voices.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point as well. It's got this really cool opening shot where it's locked off onto the hood of the car looking through the windshield at Mort Rainey, and he talks to himself, whatever, throws the car into reverse, drives around, goes back into the motel, but as the camera's like locked onto the hood of the car for a while, and then it moves around, and at a certain point it becomes separated like seamlessly, and then the car kind of backs out of frame or away from the camera. I thought that was really well done. There's also another early shot in the film when the house itself, the lake house that Depp's character stays in, is kind of introduced. It's this really kind of slow, ominous pan around the whole house, and it actually goes up and through a window, like down into the back of him as he's taking, as you mentioned, one of his many naps in the film. So I think it does some really cool stuff in the very beginning of the movie with the camera, and then never really returns to that at all. So I was a little disappointed after such a great start that there wasn't really anything to continue that creativity throughout the movie.
Yeah, it's all about the story, I think.
Yeah.
Because you only have a few locales in this movie, the lake house, the city, the town, perhaps, and then the other, his old house where Ted and the little ex-wife live.
Yeah.
Whatever her name is.
Amy, I believe.
Amy.
I don't know. Was there anything else you wanted to bring up?
I got a couple, like, not one-liners, but notes. Maybe you can give your thoughts on my different kinds of notes.
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah.
Okay, mentioning the motel scene, instead of busting in and yelling, perhaps he should have just used Ted's credit card to rack up a bill of macadamia nuts and 19 adult films. Would have been good revenge, and then we could have prevented this whole movie.
Right.
That's
a good point. I think it actually would have prevented it, because I think like the act of busting in on them was what caused that.
He snapped at that point. I'm a little more passive aggressive. I like to mess with people as opposed to actually physically hurting them.
Right.
As I was watching the movie, I started to think, like, how many of these people is he imagining? Like, he's imagining John Turturro's character, the Mississippian, damn Mississippians, and I don't know how he pulls it off. Like, Turturro, I always refer to him as the Mr. Deeds butler, because he's pretty comedic in that. He has like a Spanish accent in that, and then this one he has like a Southern accent, and then you see him in like Transformers, and he's just like speaking regular. Not a non-specific dialect of English, and he's just kind of got a wide range of acting skills, which I should really commend him for.
In The Big Lebowski too, he's the Jesus in the
So I was thinking, like, how many of these people is Depp really imagining, or Mort? Did he imagine the car and the license plate of obviously he did, because Turturro drove away in a car.
Yep.
If he's imagining Turturro, obviously the car is fake as well.
Yep.
But then that kind of brings up the idea of, was the dog real? Because no one saw the dog, because he had buried it, or he thought he buried it after it had died. Although she did ask about the dog.
Yeah, she asked about it. I think that's the only...
The dog's crossed off then.
Yeah.
The private investigator that he hires, is that guy fake? No one ever really mentions him, or no one really interacts with him, although he's in a hotel room, but it's Depp talking on the phone to him, meaning he could have just imagined the entire phone call.
Yeah, and also he was supposed to, maybe you can help me out with this. I believe they made an agreement to meet up at the general store or whatever at like 9 o'clock in the morning. Depp sleeps in until 10:15.
No one calls.
And then he goes nobody calls. And then he goes there and asks if the guy actually showed up, and they say no.
Yeah. So the old man that he was going to meet with the private investigator can also be marked as not real, because no one's ever interacted with the old man either. He only says, he goes and eats breakfast at this place every day, but no one ever really sees him. And then the car, the old man drives by in his car while Mort and Turturro are talking.
Mm-hmm.
but no one else is around, so maybe Johnny Depp and or Mort imagines him as well. And then he throws both the private investigator and the old man in the car off the cliff into the water.
Mm-hmm.
But no one really asks any questions about that either.
Right.
The cop comes up at the end and says, "We know you did it," but I think he's referring to the wife and Ted.
Yeah, I wrote that down as well. I think that was ambiguous like that on purpose, because he said, "We know that," you know, he said something like, "We know what you've done," or like, "We're going to find those bodies," or something, but he doesn't specify which ones. And I think that was done on purpose to really lead us to this discussion of like, how many people did he actually kill and how many of them were actually real?
Yeah. Winning. Mort refuses to recycle in this movie, which I think is pretty outrageous.
I like that's a note of yours.
They said the name of the movie when she pulls the chest of drawer away and finds the secret window, and she says, "Oh, look, there's a secret window." And I was just like, name of the movie. Okay. In one scene, it looked like he was dreaming about him watching the film Poltergeist with Craig T. Nelson. I think we should really watch that for a podcast, but it looked like the scene from Poltergeist with the door kind of banging.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Out with the light pouring through it.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was just dreaming about watching Poltergeist.
Okay.
Right. He makes a Talking Heads quote when he's driving up to the house. He says, "Is this my beautiful wife?" Or no, he says, "This is not my beautiful house. This is not my beautiful wife. As the days go by and the water holds me down." That's a Talking Heads reference.
Never heard that song, but okay.
Google it. Ted's a douchebag, and then of course my last note is cheaters never prosper, which of course goes back to our discussion of, did Ted and Amy deserve their murder?
Yes. Yeah.
You just agreed that they did.
Yeah. One of my favorite moments of the film was when Ted gets hit in the face with the shovel.
Timothy Hutt as Shovel Face.
I thought it was pretty great.
I like the one where he screwdrives her in the calf.
That's a little like, bit gruesome.
I would have thrown it at her head, but that's just me. But he's just like, "I'm going to nail you down like a pin the tail on the donkey."
Oh, man. Okay, well, since we're just picking up kind of scraps of notes and things, I'll go through and mention a couple things that I had written down. Did you notice there was a Hunter S. Thompson book on the coffee table?
Oh, no, I love Hunter S. Thompson, the person.
Right.
I've never read his book.
Well,
Peter Uncommon a couple times. And he's...
I mean, Depp has kind of a famous relationship with that man and that character, I think. I believe he played him in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, if I'm not mistaken.
I think he's supposed to be him. I don't know if
the character's name is him,
I've never seen the movie.
Yeah.
You know, another movie we should watch for the podcast is Johnny Depp's as Ed Wood Jr., the famous B-movie director.
Yeah.
Is that another Tim Burton film?
Yeah, I believe it is. Yeah, it's called Ed Wood, and I think Tim Burton directed it, yeah.
Yeah, George the Animal Steel plays Tor Johnson, one of the actors in those famous B-movies.
Is that a wrestler?
He's a wrestler, yeah, George the Animal Steel. He used to chew off the turnbuckle pads and just, like, eat them. But he looks a lot like Tor Johnson. If you go and watch an old Ed Wood Jr. movie, they're really bad, but Tor Johnson's like a really fat white guy with no hair, and he sometimes plays a monster, he sometimes plays a thug.
Okay. All right.
I think we should watch that and an Ed Wood Jr. film so we can just compare the two.
Oh yeah, that'd be interesting. Maybe we can
Plan 9 from Outer Space or something.
Yeah, maybe we can bash that into the Apple II and see if it'll just randomly come up because we bang on the side of it.
Still a secret.
A couple other things that I had written down is at the very end of the film, like after the I believe after Amy and Ted have been killed, it shows Mort go back to that general store and he buys like salt, butter, and some other asinine item, but the salt is called Morton Salt. And it's like that's the brand name, and his character, his full name is Morton Rainey. So I'm wondering if there's some sort of connection there. It has to be, right? Like, there's no way that they would.
You think he calls himself Mort, or that maybe Morton Rainey is another one of his split personalities that just got the name from the salt.
Yeah, that's the kind of conclusion that I came to, because on a production design level, there's no way that they would approve the product of Morton Salt being shown and slid right toward the camera in a close-up when that character's name is Morton and not have any sort of meaning there. Like, that just doesn't happen in films. So
yeah, no one says, they're never going to pick up on this.
Yeah, that's blatant. Like, that's right there. So I think, that maybe provides, like, yet another layer of kind of complexity to this movie, is if we think about it from that perspective of, like, who is the real Johnny Depp in this movie if Mort Rainey is just another one of these split personalities, and maybe what happened in Depp's original life that caused the Mort Rainey character to come into existence, you know?
Yeah.
So
that's so sick. Like, killing them isn't revenge enough. He has to eat the vegetable that is grown from the place where they're buried.
Yeah.
Constantly. Like, I'm continuously eating you. That's everlasting revenge.
Yeah, that's pretty gross.
Stephen King is some would say a genius, some would say really out there. It was interesting, though, because it looked a lot like, I mean, I don't want to say it was exactly like The Mist, but it did have that same type of, I don't know, new millennium Stephen King movie feel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, The Mist and Secret Window, same. People are trying to move book to movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. There's also like a kind of a meta aspect of the ending of this movie where in the movie itself, the characters are trying to finish the story, and like this one has a perfect ending, and they keep bringing this up over and over again. And I feel like, and again, this is not necessarily David Koepp's fault as a screenwriter, because it's based on Stephen King's original. So I just feel like it was a little pandering and like a little self-congratulatory of like keep like bashing in this concept of like, oh, this movie has a perfect ending. Like, you know what I mean? Like, did you pick up on that at all?
No, I didn't even think about that.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I just
you got
felt,
me there, dude.
It felt very kind of forced that they kept repeating and going back to how great the ending is and stuff. And then, like you said, the very final shot is actually just him biting down on this corn, which isn't the best ending, like we've already established. I think just the slow pan under the ground would have been a better ending. So
it reminds me of the movie, I don't even know if it's really a movie. I'm remembering a movie from my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a movie I was supposed to be watching, but I only saw the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was called Buried Alive 2.
Okay.
Or it could be just Buried Alive 1. I don't know.
I'm
IMDb'ing it right now.
Okay, yeah, I'm not familiar with this. It sounds like maybe something that even like Peter Jackson might have done back in the day.
Buried Alive. No, TV, that's not it. Well, anyway, for some reason, when I was a kid, we used to have like movies taped on VHS tapes.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, the end of this movie was included in the beginning of like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or whatever movie was being recorded on this videotape. And at the very end, like, they go, you think we'll ever find them? And they're like, no. And the camera pans like across the graveyard and like lowers into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And then it focuses on this girl who was buried underground with all this money, and she's screaming, and that's the end of the movie.
Wow, that's horrifying.
That scene kind of stuck with me. And anytime a camera pans underground like it did in Secret Window, I think of that movie, although I don't think it's Buried Alive. I think it's called something else. But
this mysterious untitled film will haunt you forever.
No, I'm good. It's not haunting me.
Okay.
Because I never saw the whole movie. I just saw the end of it.
Okay. Well, how about let's do some closing thoughts on Secret Window.
All right, you go ahead.
I think it's a good movie. It's not great. Don't really expect a lot from it, and I really do think that there are a lot of movies that handle this the same type of psychosis or whatever in a much better way. I think Depp is the clear standout for the reason to watch it, and it is kind of a frayed performance, and he just becomes more and more unhinged as the movie goes on. I think that's, for Johnny Depp fans, this is probably like a must-see. For everybody else, I wouldn't actually recommend it, I don't think. Even though I said it's a good movie, by that I mean it's technically executed pretty well, and like you said, Tyler, earlier, the pacing is pretty decent. But I just don't. I wouldn't necessarily recommend it, really. So, well, what about you?
It's a movie, and this is coming from my perspective. It's a movie you can only watch once. And if you're listening to the podcast, obviously the movie has been ruined for you, and we're sorry. You should have turned back at the very beginning. But Secret Window is a movie that you can only watch really once without picking it apart like we did.
Yeah.
And you can say, I mean, I was surprised by the ending. I can say that, I'm probably not the most intelligent moviegoer ever. I pick up on a lot of things, but I don't pick up on things that I should probably be worrying about.
Right.
And
yeah, you've always been into the more like the minutiae related detail.
Yeah,
stuff
when something else is staring me right in the face, I'm just like, whatever. He's wearing red. I don't care. So it's a movie that you can watch once if you don't know what the movie's about and enjoy it, and you're like, oh wow, I mean that was well done. But then you see it a second time, you're like, I know exactly what's going to happen. It's one of those movies where the ending sells the rest of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, that's actually a great point that we didn't mention earlier, where a lot of the movies, a lot of these type of movies rely on kind of surprising the audience with this big reveal, but I feel like those other movies we mentioned, Psycho and Fight Club and stuff like that, are infinitely more watchable even after knowing the ending. Like there's a style to it, there's kind of there's something about those movies that make them interesting to watch that doesn't just hinge exclusively on the big reveal. And I think this movie kind of falls apart when you look at it when you know what the reveal is.
Right.
So, yeah. Neither one of us are too hot on this, it sounds like. But anyway, good discussion nonetheless. You want to go ahead and rev up the Apple II and talk about what we're going to be watching next week?
Yeah, I'm on the road. I'm on the road this week, but as usual, I've got it strapped to my back.
Good.
CPU, monitor, mouse, keyboard. Actually, we don't really utilize a mouse. Full keyboard activity. So let's see what we're watching next week.
All right.
All right, next week we're going to be watching Gamer with Ludacris. And fill me in here, who's the main character?
I like how Ludacris is the actor that you bring up. He's not starring
in it. Well, he's in it.
I believe it's Gerard Butler.
Gerard Butler and Ludacris.
And Michael C. Hall from Dexter.
You mean the guy from The Breakfast Club?
No, that is not Michael C. Hall. What is that guy? Anthony Michael Hall.
Close enough.
Different people. Yes, the movie is Gamer. It is directed by Mark Neveldine and Brian Taylor, and it is available now on Netflix Watch Instant. So if you guys want to, check that out at some point this week and listen back next week to our discussion of that. We're going to actually have a pretty special guest on. I don't want to say who it is just in case they end up bailing, but it should be definitely...
It's Ludacris.
No, set your expectations a bit lower.
So ridiculous in the club, man.
So yeah.
No, it's basically just gonna be me saying Ludacris lyrics.
Brilliant. All right. Well, if you want to email us some Ludacris lyrics, you can do that at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com.
Please do.
You can also call us and leave us your best Ludacris voicemail impression at 904-469-6566. Please, for the love of God, somebody do that.
I'm looking for Tayo Cruz.
Oh, wow. Yeah, please just read the script for Too Fast, Too Furious and pick out some select Ludacris lines and then just recite those to us for our amusement. That would be awesome.
Fast, Too Furious was pretty good. I liked that one.
I liked it, too.
Except... Tokyo Drift was awful.
Yes.
And I have still to watch 4 Fast, 4 Furious before I watch 5 Fast, 5 Furious.
Right. All right.
Or is it Fast, 5 Fast... No, excuse me. Fast with the S replaced with a 5, and then Furious with S replaced with a 5? Is that how they did it this time?
That's what it should be, but it's not. Again, maybe we can, shove some sort of electrical socket or something into the Apple II and get, like, a Fast and Furious podcast going at some point.
Omnibus podcast.
Anyway, you could subscribe to this podcast for free in iTunes and leave us a review. That would be really great if you could do that. You can check us out on Facebook. We're also on Twitter at twitter.com/NJNMPodcast. And we have one new follower, and that would be at Allison Loring, our guest from last week. So thanks for the follow, Allison. I guess at some point we'll stop reading off the new followers, but I don't know. I'm kind of digging it for now. It's not really any skin off our back, so... or whatever that phrase is. Anyway, thanks for that. Tyler, let's go ahead and wrap up the character name game. So for this week, the character's name is Rudy Baylor. You have any guesses as to what movie that character is from?
Well, I'm going to have to go obvious. Is it Rudy's character from Rudy?
It is not. Nope.
Samwise Gamgee?
Nope.
Rudy, what's the last name?
Rudy Baylor.
Baylor. B-A-Y-L-O-R?
Yes, sir. This movie came out...
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3.
No. You have to keep in mind there has to be some sort of connection to a film that was released this past weekend. That is really random. So I'll give you a hint.
Rango came out.
It's either Rango or the Adjustment Bureau.
Okay.
The movie in question was released in 1997.
Baylor.
Not that that really gives you any hint.
Was it Good Will Hunting?
It was not, because... No, it wasn't.
Does it have Matt Damon in it?
It does have Matt Damon in it. I was just getting ready to give that away, and then I stopped, but I think you picked up on it anyway, so yes.
If it wasn't Good Will Hunting, it was Dogma.
No.
Was it Mallrats?
It is not, no.
Was it... Clerks.
No, it's not a Kevin Smith film.
Is it a Kevin Smith film?
It's not a Kevin Smith film. It actually is directed by Francis Ford Coppola, which I didn't really know until I'm looking at the
IMDb. Shoot. I was going to say Bram Stoker's, but that was early 90s.
Yeah, 1997, Francis Ford Coppola. It's also, I'll give you a big hint here, based on a John Grisham novel.
Oh, okay, all right. I think I know this now. Is it The Pelican Brief?
It is not. That's with Denzel Washington and Julia Roberts, but it's very close, I think.
Is it the A Time of a Kill or Time to Kill?
No, I think that's also a John Grisham book, but that's not right.
Oh, I think I know this one. It's the one where he plays the lawyer.
Yes.
And he lives in the duplex.
I've actually never seen the movie, so I can't confirm his living scenario. But Danny DeVito co-stars in it.
Yes, I know Danny DeVito's in it.
Danny DeVito plays a character named Deck Shiflet, which I find...
Oh, that just puts me over the edge. I know it now. Shoot. Grisham.
This
is it. It has to do with like Louisiana, maybe.
I don't know. Like I said, I've never seen this actual film. But if you were to nickname a person who frequents a strip club often, this title would be that person's nickname.
A patron.
No.
Patron of the strip club.
No.
A person that visits a strip club often. I like your hint. He would be a sex maniac, first of all, possibly, or a bachelor, maybe?
It is an act. There's a pop culture.
Making it rain?
Yes.
Rain.
You've just said it, basically.
Making it rain? That's the name of the movie?
That's not the name of the movie. It's... Come on, put those...
The Rainmaker.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, the Rainmaker.
Oh, I'm glad I figured out your hint.
Yes.
I could have sent people out for a long stretch of time.
Awesome. All right. Well, yeah, that was borderline disastrous. But anyway, maybe...
There's only one person. I'm the only one guessing. Of course, it's going to be disastrous.
Right, yeah.
I have no recollection of anything.
All right. Well, let's go back and forth and just tell people where they can find more of our work on the internet this week. Tyler, let's start with you.
First?
Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, let's start with you.
I write at the Solar Sentinel. I just posted post 300.
Nice.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
We thought the Sentinel was going to end, but it did not. So you may consider yourself lucky or unlucky, depending on what type of reader you are of the Sentinel. Also, I write at Destageddon, which has been pretty cool lately. And the March Movie Madness stuff over at notjustnewmovies.com. You're going to see me popping up all the time because we're only on, what, the sixth day of March?
Yeah, yeah, it's going
to
be good.
We went nuts last year. So if you've read all the reviews for this month, go back to 2010 and click on the month, and it'll have all the reviews from last year's March Movie Madness, yeah. And that's really a joy to read.
Yeah, there was some good stuff in there, definitely.
I'm completely biased, but still, listen to what I say.
Clearly. All right, so you guys can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/BenPears. That's B-E-N... What is that noise?
P-E-A-R-S.
What is that noise in the back?
I was crumpling up my notes. Okay. I know you're going to need them.
Yes, Ben Pears, Ben P-E-A-R-S, yes. You guys can find me writing sporadically at geektyrant.com, occasionally at filmonic.com, also this new website very infrequently called moviecultists.com, and of course, as Tyler mentioned, notjustnewmovies.com, the namesake for this podcast. You can also find me on the Geek Tyrant weekly podcast, which I alluded to earlier. And music for our show is provided by George Turner and the Bandits. You can find their music at gtbandits.com. They're also on Twitter and Facebook, so check them out over there. And again, we will be watching Neville Dean and Taylor's Gamer for next week, so feel free to check that out. And
Buddha.
Shoot us an email or leave us a message or something with your ludicrous impressions, because I really want to play some of those on the air next week. So
We're doing it regardless.
Tyler, thanks for your time, as always, and listeners...
I'm saluting to you.
Yes, listeners, thanks for listening, and we'll see you guys next week.
Later.
I've got the blues. I've got the blues for you, yeah. I got the blues, yeah. Money that I had.